Hi, I'm Leah Canland with my husband Steve, and you're listening to our Insightful Adventures, a show that chronicles our travels around Australia and the savvy, scientific, and scenic things we experience along the way.
Today on the podcast, we are talking about South Australia in its entirety. So we went from Cooper Pedy to Port Augusta, 875 kilometers, 525 miles. Port Augusta to Adelaide, 222 kilometers, 133 miles. Adelaide to Mount Gambier, which is almost to the border of Victoria, and 382 kilometers or 229 miles for a total of 1,498 kilometers or about 900 miles. And we did all that South Australia in 6 days. So our first stop was Cooper Pedy, which is the opal capital of the world. Well, I don't know if that is specifically is, but Australia is. Australia mines about 95% of the world's opal.
Yeah. And Cooper Pedy is one of about three towns in South Australia that specializes in opal mining. And by far, Cooper Pedy is, not that it's a big town, but it's the biggest of those three, the most touristy.
Definitely the most touristy. And it's just a quirky town. It's like half ghost town, half just, it is just a quirky, bizarre little town.
Yeah, the whole town knows what it is and it embraces what it is. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, it's great.
Yeah.
Anyways, so opal was first found in this area by a little 14-year-old by the name of Willie Hutchinson, who was with his dad and a few other people. They were actually looking for gold after coming from the Kalgoorlie gold mine, which is in Western Australia, and they found gold out there. There was a gold rush. So they came from there over here. They were still looking for gold, and they camped for a night, and Little Willie found opal.
Little Willie.
February 1st, 1915, the first official opal claim was opened February 9th of that same year, but they had to leave February 19th due to the unbearable heat and no water. And I mean unbearable heat, that's 45 degrees plus Celsius.
Wow.
Which is 115 degrees Fahrenheit. It was exceeding those temperatures and one of Australia's worst droughts.
Wow.
So there's no water. And in fact, part of the opal mining, the reason this town was so hard off the ground is because it was so hard getting water there.
Yeah, and even in recent years, there's been water rationings, and it's a really tough, I mean, they're living in the outback of Australia, and that is very unforgivable conditions.
So they drill down until they find some opal tailings, which is a small drill, and then they make a shaft big enough for a man to fit down, and then they lower the man down. And back in the day, it was just all like pickaxes and shovels. And then they would dig sideways and just look for opal, little gems. It has to be a certain size for them to cut it up, the bigger the size. And there's all these different classifications of what kind of opal it is and how big and whatever. I'm not like a geologist, a gemstone person, but they've had to find these big these things, and then they can sell them. That's what they make money off. And you can make money off of them, and people do, but it is super hot and super dry, and what they're digging through is just clay, just kind of soft rock. And it just, I don't know, it's tough work.
Yeah, what I didn't realize, so opal, when people hit it big with opal, it's because they find this pocket of opal, and they look for what they call slips and seams in the rocks, which I think has something to do with the actual formation of the rock itself. And then between these, where a slip and a seam meet each other, they hope that there's a deposit of opal or this opal pocket. And what I didn't realize is that opal is formed from the remains of organic material. Basically, there's dinosaurs that have decomposed in a certain way, or certain types of, you know, marine invertebrates that have decomposed in a certain way. And they've found even fossilized dinosaur bones. Yeah, which is pretty cool. So I'm not sure of the whole decomposition process of a dinosaur that may or may not turn it into opal, but it definitely is from organic material, which is pretty cool.
Anyways, opal mining peaked in about the 80s, 1979. Up to then, it was a multi-million dollar industry. And since the 90s, it's just been on the decrease. And I don't know if it's because of just demand is so low, or if it's just hard to find, and or what it is. But Cooper PD, definitely, it's not in its heyday right now.
No.
You can see there's just tailings of mines everywhere, and there's signs that you shouldn't, like, walk off the road just because people just dig just holes, and if you walk around, you're more likely to fall down a mine shaft. And so there's tailings everywhere. And it never was a huge, I mean, it was a big industry, but it wasn't like capitalized by one major player. It's, and even to this day, it's still just 1 to 3 man teams.
And the only thing that has saved this town from becoming a full out ghost town, a boom and bust place, is that they have embraced the tourism sector. And instead of making money mining for opal, most of, well, I don't know the percentage, but there are several mines that you can tour instead and just see what an old mine looked like or see what a current mine looks like. And that's how people are making their money.
But another thing that makes Cooper PD interesting is back in the day, during its heyday, since it is so hot there, they would live underground. So their mines, they have these big machines nowadays that can just like churn through all the clay essentially, and they just live underground in underground apartments. And the whole town has kind of embraced that part of it, and we stayed at a hostel underground, completely underground. A lot of their buildings are just underground. And
yeah, I mean, you visit churches that are underground, and you visit museums that are underground. There's several hostels and hotels that are underground, and that's sort of the quirky appeal and what draws people to the town, is being able to live underground for a little while.
Yeah, and it is cool. It is like, it, the temperature's bearable. It's cooler under there, and it was cool.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few different movies that have been filmed out in the Cooper PD region, like the third Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome, with Mel Gibson and Tina Turner.
Yes, that was filmed out there. Also, the movie Pitch Black, and they have the old ship, the set, right, of the ship that they crash landed on the planet. It's set up after they filmed it. The city bought it and set it up kind of in town, and it's seen better days. The ship is haggard. Have you seen the movie Pitch Black, where all the creatures come out of, like, the little cone shaped things? They've bought tons of those, and so those are scattered throughout the entire town.
yeah, it's just a cool feel to the town. So they have, so this artist, we don't know who it is or anything, but it's sort of this plot on top of a hill, and he's taken those movie sets that Steve has talked about and put them all over, and put old, like, computer monitors around, and
one keyboards.
One of my favorite things is just like a random pillar, and he's stacked these old keyboards, like, just vertically going up one of these pillars, and he calls it this white man totem pole. And
whole town is just this quirky, like, abstract art. Like, the town is someone's abstract art.
Yeah, and it's just a joke, and it's fun.
Yeah. Anyway, there's just a whole lot of weird stuff to do. We went to this dead guy's Crocodile Harry's, and he had
his
house, and it was completely underground, and the guy has passed on. But you can walk into his house, and it's just room after room. There's messages written all over the walls, and apparently before, he used to collect women's underwear?
So I wish I knew the full story, but I know that in his life he was an artist, and you can see that from the outside of his house. He has lots of recycled material that he's turned into sculptures, both of, you know, a guy riding a horse and a mermaid with a claw and with people riding bicycles and things like that. But we have a very outdated Australia guidebook that said he was alive, and, you know, it's outdated in certain ways, but I guess in the guidebook that we have, it talks about how he did have a collection of women's underwear outside the house, but now the only collection of underwear that we could see was in the bedroom, where people would sign just pieces of lingerie and they'd be hanging in the bedroom. And there's also like t-shirts that were signed and hats that were signed and business cards that were signed. And then most of the walls of his house, which again is this underground cave, is just writing from, you know, the 80s, the 90s, yeah. 2000s.
Just people like marking there, hey, so-and-so is here, glad to meet you. And he had so much. I mean, he had his house, which was big, and then he had dug out tons of area out back, and who knows what he was doing with it all, but there was just, anyways, it was quirky and weird.
Yeah.
And we don't know the full story.
No, but that's Crocodile Harry's house.
That's Crocodile
in
Harry's.
In Koopa Petey.
In Koopa Petey. And then, anyways, the next day we did pretty much small town adventures. So we went to several small towns.
Our first stop was the town of Woomera. And Woomera has a, like a British military history as well as a space program history. A lot of testing of airplanes and weapons and missiles sort of happened in this town of Woomera.
Back in the day, it was like super top secret. The testing out there was almost like Australia's Area 51 type of thing, where they just did a bunch of testing of rockets and spaceships and
satellites.
And they had, so Australia, I think, was the fourth nation in the world to put a satellite in space. And they actually used a retired or retired or recycled U.S. rocket, actually, to put it up there. So the U.S. gave Australia a rocket, and that's what they used to put their first satellite up in space.
Yeah.
And then we went to several other small towns, which was just cool and fun to do these small town adventures. So we went to Peterborough, is that how you say it? Peterborough?
Yeah, Peterborough.
And there's a magnetic hill.
Yeah, and the magnetic hill is real. It's sort of a gimmicky thing. Basically, it was hard to find in the first place.
It was hard
but
to find.
There is a slight incline, which they call a hill. And if you turn your car off and put it in neutral instead of rolling backwards, the hill that's magnetic will pull your car up to the top. And it was really cool. And the way that they even discovered that this hill was magnetic was totally a fluke. Basically, in 1930, there was a farmer that got a flat tire, and it just happened to be on that section of road. And so he did the right thing that you're supposed to do, and so he put just a rock behind his wheel so that when he jacked it up, it wouldn't roll away. But the car started rolling uphill. And so that's how they figured out it was a magnetic hill.
Yeah, and we did it, and it works. Well, it's not like a big hill. It is an incline, so.
And we were on the wrong side of the hill, and we definitely rolled backwards. So it wasn't like one of those things where it's like, if you park by a train track and then you put it in neutral, the ghost children will push you to safety, but really you're gonna, really you're going downhill. No, this was like legit a hill because we put it in neutral on the wrong spot and we rolled downhill.
Yeah, and when we finally figured out where it was, which is just on a dirt road through someone's farm, we rolled uphill.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. And then we went to a town called Gladstone, and there's a couple cool things there. They had this old jail, and it supposedly back in the day, it was a maximum security jail that housed just some of the worst in Australia. And even today, it's in the middle of nowhere. But way back then, so it finally shut down, I think in like the 70s, or first shut down, I don't know, like the 40s or 30s, and then it kind of reopened here and there. But they apparently, they would do experiments on the prisoners, and torture them and do lobotomies on them. So take out part of their brain and just do some horrible, horrible stuff. We didn't end up touring it, but I did talk to the lady there who does do the tours. And she said, yeah, back in the day, they were in the middle of nowhere. So no one was going to know what they were doing. And they just treated their prisoners horribly. They had both men and women there. They were segregated. But apparently it was just brutal.
Yeah, that it sounds creepy. And not only can you do just a normal day tour, but they have night ghost tours. And on top of that, you can actually spend the night in a jail cell if you wanted to.
If you wanted to, which I did not want to. Leo was kind of for it, and I was like, nope.
I know. I was just crazy talk.
I knew it was crazy talk. There was no way I was going to do that. Because no. I asked the lady, I was like, have you seen any ghosts or heard? And she was like, oh, yeah. There's probably about, like, we know, there's like 75-ish ones that we know by name. And I was like, are they like violent at all? She's like, no, occasionally we get a new one in that does start acting crazy, but we just kind of cuss at it a lot and either it calms down or it leaves. And she was like, we've had paranormal people come in here a lot. And she said, they always find stuff. And she says, people that stay the night, and by the way, when they stay the night, it's just, here's a cell, down there's the bathroom.
You have to bring your own bedding.
You have to bring your own bedding. I'm going to leave, and like, it's like a horror movie. Like, oh, you want to stay in this house? Like, the housekeeper comes during the day, opens the house, and then leaves. The housekeeper, there's no one there except for you.
Like, do so they lock you in the cell? Or
no, they don't lock you in the cell, but like, they go home. They don't stay. There's no one there. Anyways, and she said that people have heard doors slamming and opening at night. She said people have heard screams at night. Like, this place is bona fide haunted.
And so for some of our listeners, that sounds like the most epic and exciting thing to do. And for other of our listeners,
I am like scared right now just talking
about it. I know. I glanced at the door because it's just kind of creepy talking about it.
I can't. My scary threshold is so low.
So Gladstone, if you're not into haunted, creepy jails, Gladstone has something else that it can offer you. If you're into specialized sodas, then Gladstone has a privately owned small soda manufacturer right in the town.
Right in the town. It was just recently bought, and so the manufacturer will unfortunately be moved. But we went to the visitor center, and the visitor center, you can do a tasting, and you can still buy the drinks there. And this wonderful woman gave us a tasting of a lot of their drinks.
Yeah, so the company is called Trend Drinks, and then the sodas themselves that people are most familiar with are these FC Grub drinks. And the visitor center in Gladstone, they specialize in offering soda tastings for any visitors. And so that's what Steve and I did. And she had all these different sodas lined up that were most conducive to our palate. And even though it was just sodas that we were sipping on, it felt so fancy and we felt very special.
So they do have a lot of different flavors. They have ginger beer, which I really like. I've tried a lot of different ginger beers here in Australia. They have lemon lime bitters. They had a chocolate, which was actually really gross.
Yeah, don't bother.
Don't bother. They had a Portello, which actually tastes kind of like a red cream soda. They had a sarsaparilla, which is also, I think it's a really Australian flavor. And it tastes kind of like a root beer. It's like a licorice molasses, which that description sounds kind of gross, but it's actually kind of good.
Yeah.
And they had a lime, they had a raspberry. And then they had these like sparkling drinks. Like, you know, you have sodas and then you have like sparkling ciders. They had a sparkling honey.
Oh my goodness. I've never tasted anything like that. I mean, we're talking about some of these like maybe kind of exotic flavors, but sparkling honey is something my taste buds have never experienced, and they loved it.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was good. And then they had a sparkling
ginger.
Honey ginger and
just a
sparkling ginger. Yeah, and they were all just good and delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Gladstone had those two very different and iconic things to offer.
And then from there, we spent the night, and then we went to Adelaide. Oh no, from there we went from there to Adelaide, and we went to a place called Glenelg, which is kind of like the Adelaide Fremantle, just kind of an old port with some old restaurants and a beach
and a jetty.
And a jetty. Oh, and we went down to Limestone Coast, which is by Kingston Southeast. They had some old volcano stuff going on down there.
Yeah, the Limestone Coast just sort of refers to a section of South Australia along a certain part of the coast leading into Victoria. And again, we just sort of hit up all these small towns along the way. We were excited about Kingston Southeast because it's one of the major places that fishes locally for southern rock lobster. And we're like, oh, that sounds like a pretty iconic meal to eat. And what we didn't know is that it costs, you know, over $100 for a kilo.
No, it's like, to buy it straight off the fisherman's, it's like $136 a kilo. To get it in a restaurant, it's like $180 a kilo.
Yeah.
And like one lobster is basically a kilo. So you're paying $180 for one person to eat a rock lobster.
Yeah. So we're like, never mind. Sounds nice. We are cheap and we'll just go back and have some ramen.
That is what we did.
Yeah. Another cool thing that we did in South Australia is we went to a national park called Mount Remarkable, and we were really excited to do this hike that was the Alligator Gorge circuit hike. And it was about 2 kilometers, and it only took a little over an hour, but it was just kind of meh. Like, the gorge narrowed to about 2 meters wide, so about like 6 feet wide. The gorge sort of like went in and then came back out, but it was for such a short amount of time. It was only okay, but it was still fun to get a hike in because we didn't have
pretty.
A lot of time in South Australia. But yeah, we saw some wallabies hanging out on the top of the gorge wall looking down at us, and lots of lizards, lots of mosquitoes.
Yeah, lots of mosquitoes. So I wouldn't necessarily go to Mount Remarkable again. It was cool.
But the drive itself was really pretty, though. There were like these golden wheat fields everywhere and all these sheep grazing. And I saw in one of this, like this huge field of golden wheat, there was like this majestic emu in the middle of the field, like sitting down with its head proudly held high. And if you've seen an emu up close, they are like these wonky creatures that
just kind of ugly.
They're so ugly. They're like half balding and they look like bewildered all the time. But
that is so how they look. They're just like, what?
But this emu in the wheat field was the most majestic emu I've ever seen. So still a pretty
probably
drive.
Because you're so far away.
Yeah. Because you couldn't see it up close.
And that was, and so Adelaide is the capital of South Australia, and we only spent like a day or something there. Anyways, it didn't really hit anything for us. We went to the cultural center, but we were kind of ready, like as soon as we got there, we were ready just to leave the city again, actually.
Yeah, it was, we were excited to go to Adelaide, but once we got there and we hit Glenelg and we hit the jetty and we hit the cultural center, there really wasn't a lot of, we like to do hikes and we look for free stuff to do in cities, and there just wasn't a lot to do. And we had a really exciting lineup the next day to go down we were trying to get down to Mount Gambier, and so we're like, well, if we're more excited about Mount Gambier, we might as well just cut our time in Adelaide short so that we can have more time in our other place.
Yeah. That's not to say there isn't stuff to do in Adelaide, just for us that have limited resources and can't go to all the fancy dining. And
well, what we really wanted to do was go cage diving with great white sharks, and you can do that in Port Lincoln. There's about 3 different peninsulas in South Australia.
Yeah.
And so in Port Lincoln, you can do cage diving with sharks. And if we had all the money in the world, we totally would have done it.
Yeah, which would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But we're poor.
So we just went to Mount Gambier instead and did beautiful free hikes.
Yep. And Mount Gambier is just a cool old volcano extinct range, and learned a lot about the geology and...
Mm-hmm. And the town itself, not only does it have like these... So Mount Gambier is actually just several different like crater lakes. And there's like this one, the water source of the town of Mount Gambier is a lake called Blue Lake, which at this time of year during the summer in the Southern Hemisphere summer, it is just this gorgeous blue, like this really vibrant blue color.
It's so pretty. Just the blue, just never seen water that blue before.
Yeah. So you can... There are several lookouts. You can walk around the lake, and it's very outdoor friendly. And there's towers you can walk to. And there's four different lakes that were made up of made from volcanic activity, basically. Two of them have dried up in the past 30 or 40 years, but Valley Lake and Blue Lake both still have water in them. And so that was really pretty to see. Then there's this wildlife park close to Valley Lake that you can see kangaroos, and there's koalas in the trees if you can find them, and ducks and freshwater birds and things like that. So it's nice too.
Yeah.
Oh, and long-necked turtles.
Oh, we did see long-necked turtles.
Yeah, those are cool.
Those are cool little guys. They camouflage themselves really well.
Yeah, they were all covered in algae, sort of like these moving rocks, and it was pretty much their long necks that gave them away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was fun to do.
And that is South Australia.
So in the last segment of our podcast, each of us will share either a personal insight from our travels or a little adventure that wasn't covered earlier. So I'll start with the insight of our time in South Australia. Steve and I, like we said before, had the opportunity to stay in Adelaide, and really... Once we got to a town, which it had been a long time since we had seen a city. We were Darwin in the Northern Territory, which is thousands of kilometers. I mean, it's basically the opposite coast. You know, you're talking like the north coast of the continent of Australia is Darwin. And that was the last city we saw before heading straight through the entire center and hitting the south coast of the continent of Australia, which is where Adelaide is.
And it was the biggest city, and it's bigger than Perth, I think. So it's the biggest city even since living in Perth that we've been to.
Yeah, that's true. And Steve and I just have the personalities that prefer these small quirky towns over the big city life. And it's something that we sort of already knew about ourselves, but when we just spent a few hours in Adelaide and we're sort of over it and ready to go drive a few more hours to Mount Gambier and have a hiking adventure, that sort of just made it really clear that Steve and I are not city people as much as we are country people.
Which is just great. That is true.
To each their own.
To each their own.
Yeah.
Had we had unlimited resources, there would have been heaps of stuff to do in the cities.
Yeah, and there's like beautiful wine country down there. So if you're into drinking wine, you just would go crazy. You'd love it. You know, and like I said, there's cage diving with sharks, which sounds so awesome. But we don't have the time and we don't have the money. And so... For travelers like us, it just didn't hold the appeal.
Yeah, that's very true. And I'm going to share a quick little adventure.
Oh, and there's Kangaroo Island, which we didn't have a chance to do either. But Kangaroo Island would have been awesome because it's like a mini Australia all packed into one island. So again, if we had unlimited resources, we would have gone to these very cool places, but we couldn't. Okay, sorry.
True. Choices are made for us. Anyway, so our little adventure is actually coming out of Mount Remarkable. We saw this roadkill, which was probably a dead wallaby. And we saw Goanna or Joanna. I always say Joanna, but I think it's pronounced Goanna, which is a giant lizard. And this giant lizard was going to town on this dead roadkill wallaby. And as we drove up, he just, like, you could see him, just his big head, just tear out a flesh of this wallaby and then walked off into the bush. And then we, like, drove by, and he kind of, like, stuck around. You can tell he wasn't done eating. He was done with dinner, but we kind of waited, wanted to watch him, and eventually he kind of walked off, and then we drove away. But just, we just came up, and this goanna was just having dinner on a dead wallaby.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew they were carnivores. I didn't know that. I mean, these lizards are big, right? They're probably the size of a small dog. And I didn't know that they just went for, like, a roadkill.
I was not expecting it either. From my perspective, I just saw this, like, really jerky movement from this roadkill. And so I thought that it was still alive. And then it wasn't until I saw the goanna, like, tear free this bit of flesh and start, like, munching on it that I was like, oh my gosh, that is a separate animal on top of that animal, and it is eating it. And it was actually one of those things where, like, it's so gross you can't look away.
Yeah, but also fascinating, because goannas are cool giant lizards.
Yeah, they are.
And just kind of seeing them. And he was only upset at us because he had to move away from his dinner.
And he wasn't like running away. He was just like, guess I'll just get over here. Oh, what are you still doing
there? Yeah, he wasn't like running away like, I'm afraid of you. Just like, ugh, I have to move.
Yeah.
And that's the little adventure. Anyways, thanks for listening to our podcast. You can catch us on Instagram to see pictures we posted. And that's a great place to ask us any follow-up questions or anything at all, really. Ask us there, and we'll do our best to respond. And that's Instagram at Insightful Adventures.
Catch us in our next episode when we wrap up our experience in South Australia.